Welcome to the Prison and Sober podcast with your hosts, Sam Goldfinch and Ellie Crow. If you want to make your life bigger, not smaller, then this is the podcast for you. If you can sense that you're destined for more and you're curious about how drinking could be holding you back, listen in and come on this journey with us. Through the interplay of mind and body practices, we will help you elevate your daily life and discover the wonder and potential of going alcohol free. Let's make life bigger together.
So I'm coming to you with a little announcement, which is very exciting. Some of you will know that I periodically run small coaching groups, and historically it's been all women. And this time round, I've had some requests for some for mixed groups. So I've had some men get in touch that want to participate. And so this time round, I'm going to run a group as a bit of an experiment, and we're going to see how it goes as a mixed class. So this is for you if you have a spell of time alcohol free. It might be a small spell of time alcohol free, but you want to stay that way. You want to continue on. You want to see where it might take you. And you have a sense of there being some deeper reasons why you might be drinking. So we are going to be working together in a small intimate environment over the course of 3 months. And we're going to be delving into the deeper stuff. We're going to be journeying back to self. So if you are interested in having a conversation to see whether it might be a good fit for you, there's a link in the show notes. Book a call with me. We'll have a little chat. We'll see whether we feel like it's a good fit for you. And then you could come and join me and this merry band of new folks at the end of March, very end of March, beginning of April. We're going to get started. So I hope to see you there. And yeah, lots of love.
Ow, chicka wow wow.
I thought I was just about to say, why don't you share that thing about how we're going to be professional and do this one first?
Never.
Did some bow chicka wow wow noise.
Fuck that, Mr. Sam.
Fuck that.
Do a bow chicka wow wow to start with.
What's that from? Is that from an 80s song? Probably, isn't it?
Maybe. I did have a bit of a blast from the past on my trip back up north for thought half term. I was I caught up with somebody I haven't seen for 25 odd years, something like that. And he said to me, do you remember when we used to go to Brutus Gold's Love Train? It was awesome. There was probably lots of bow chicka wow wows there. Ah, back in the day. Also, funny story. Funny, slightly embarrassing story, slightly awkward story whilst away. So we were, I'm not going to name the place, but somewhere up north, and I was with children, eldest daughter Pearl, youngest daughter Noah, and we were heading to the soft play. And we were at a little seaside town near where I grew up. And back in the day, it was a lovely seaside town. Now it's a bit run down. It's still like, you know, coastline's still lovely, but it's just a bit tired, bless it.
Yeah.
And all of the industry and what have you's kind of taken a knock over the years. So it's just like, there's not a lot of money there anymore. And some of the buildings are a bit run down, and we were walking through a gunnel between. So something like, what's a gunnel? The alleyway between
alleyway for anyone
houses,
who speaks
right?
Actual English.
Yeah. Terraced houses, right? My little darlings, Pearl says to me, Mummy, I feel sorry for the people that live here because their houses don't look very nice. And then Noah goes, yeah, and it's cold. It's like, yeah, he pretty much summed up the North there. So
that's so good.
I was like, shit, God, what have I done, like, with these little middle class Cambridgeshire children?
I live in the North. What are you on about? It's great up here.
It is great. And that's where I grew up. And I'm like, wow, you know, and now I have these children that are just like, I don't know.
Well,
super privileged.
That can happen. That can happen.
Yeah. I'm gonna take them down a coal mine and show them what life's really about.
Sort about.
Right. On that note, so that there's the funny story at the beginning. So check, we've done the bow chicka wow wow and the funny story. What's next?
Well, we're going to talk about, and this is going to be useful for people. We're going to talk specifically about alcohol, but it's going to be useful for when we're trying to get a day one with anything. We're going to talk about how to go about getting that day one and some pitfalls that seemingly seem to catch a lot of people out. Just patterns that we've noticed with people and ourselves when we're trying to get our first day alcohol free, sugar free, whatever.
Going to the gym, whatever you're procrastinating about.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Anything that you've got like resistance to and whatever.
And where if you're feeling like you're a little further along in your booze journey, then it'll be interesting also for you to reflect back on those early days.
Yeah, and what you've learned from your journey that's applicable to other journeys that you're now on. So, yeah, so the first thing that I really wanted to talk about, because it's a pattern that I've noticed, is that often people are like, I really want to get day one together. I really just want to get that day one. But that's not actually how they're thinking about it. They're like, they're thinking that they want to sort of stop forever or something, and that day one, if I just get that together. But actually, often thinking about one day in isolation is incredibly powerful, because you can step out the pressure cooker in your head. Like there's a part of us in our heart that might be like, I really want to be alcohol free. We can honor that. We're not doing it wrong if we kind of, what's the word, placate, I guess, the other part of us, the other bit that's like, oh, fuck that, that's too scary. I you know, we say, well, we're just going to do a day. We're just going to see what we see. Because, and it depends where we are in our journey or whatever, but if you're still actively drinking and you're looking to get some information and get, you know, a day is amazing, because you're either going to really find it sort of a bit of a challenge and you're going to get some information and you can go from there, or you might find it surprisingly easy. But I've noticed that if people are in the pressure cooker, if what they're really up to is saying to themselves, I'm just going to try and get one day together, but in their mind, they're really thinking about that big concept of forever or whatever.
Yeah.
They're in the pressure cooker. So get out of it and just actually take one day, literally do one day and take all the pressure off yourself and see what you see. Does that make sense? Have I explained that well?
You have. Because quite innocently, that's what we do. Like you say, we say it's a day, but not really. In our subconscious, it's the forever thing, which does just feel too big, too enormous. When you were talking, I was reflecting back on just before I discovered the science about booze, and just how unappealing a day one was, because I didn't want to stop.
Yeah, or like feel shit. Yeah.
It was like there was no way I wanted to have a day one. I didn't want to have a day not drinking, and I certainly didn't want to stop forever, because I, as sad as it sounds now, I couldn't see that there was a life worth living that didn't have booze in it. Mm. But that's just indicative of how much belief, you know, crap, all of these rubbish beliefs about booze, how much noise there was for me. And so day one would have been, I mean, I could have had a day one. I decided that I was going to do dry January rather reluctantly, but almost like the, oh, well, you know, I haven't got a problem then, have I? If I can do dry January, then I'm proving that through, you know, almost like, what's the word, punishing myself for a month, that like, I clearly haven't got a problem then, have I?
Well, that's a classic, isn't it? The old prove you're not this or whatever, prove you don't have a drinking problem, because by stopping for a month, loads of people think about it in that way.
Yeah. And so that's what I was headed towards. And I'd already pretty much decided I wasn't going to enjoy it, but it was like a, not necessarily consciously, but subconsciously, like a form of punishment of, you know, and a reset and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But something really important changed in that discovery of some new knowledge, which led to new thinking, which led to new beliefs, totally disrupted the whole thing, such that I inadvertently and in a completely unplanned way had a day one without even realizing that's what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And so this was the traversing over the space, the liminal space, from being so wrapped up in the belief about booze and relaxation and stress release, learning the science, and then going, that doesn't fucking make any sense anymore. Why would I do that? And so in that moment, I've described it before, you know, it was like a magic trick. It was like, didn't want to drink anymore. And of course, that's not the whole story. But in that moment, something seismic had happened and shifted. So it wasn't an efforting thing. It wasn't like, oh, I need to have a day one. Oh, I need to put myself through something that I don't want to put myself through. It was effortless. And as I said, that wasn't the full story. That's not, you know, the end of it all. But wow, that feels different than almost like, you know, beating ourselves up and putting pressure on ourselves to achieve a so-called day one when what and so what? So what if it, like, and of course we can talk about the what you were alluding to around the building like micro wins upon micro wins and getting into momentum. That is a thing for sure. But a day one only means what you make it mean anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
How you feel about it is what's more important.
I mean, if you just tie yourself to a chair and say, don't allow me to get out of this chair for the entire day. Like, you know, you might be kicking and screaming about it, and you're like, yeah, there we go. I've got my day one job done. It's you're right. It's there's more going on than the kind of behavioral aspect of just stopping for a day. Well, two things occur to me. The first is that just having that day in isolation, if you imagine like I'm kind of imagining like a dark room where it's like, oh God, I've just like got nothing, you know, I seemingly can't do this. I can't even get a day together. I really want to be free, all this kind of stuff. Well, just getting that one day together. And even if you drink the next day or whatever, like it's okay. Like it's like puncturing a hole in it. So light starts coming in, you know, it's like, and there's very, very different. It's a big difference between, you know, you're going to learn something powerful. And what I love, what I really love about what you shared a minute ago, actually, is that it's testament and it shows how a lot of the work, if you like, perhaps that's the wrong word, but a lot of the things we can see and do to start setting ourselves free can absolutely start before we've even stopped drinking, right? So I think a lot of people, they've got it mapped out so that they're behind or they're failing or they're not doing well or they're not doing the work until they've actually had a period of time alcohol free or anything free. When actually, if during the process of drinking or something, if we really just sit with what's going on for ourselves non-judgmentally, right, lots of love and compassion for ourselves, we'll start to understand very often what we're up to. So it might be, oh, I can see now I have a pattern that every time I get stressed out or every time this happens I find myself reaching for alcohol. Now we might have an insight, we might find something like you did, finding you know, that PDF that you found that helped you break down why moderation isn't helpful, and boom, then suddenly something can happen. And then suddenly the day one thing becomes a lot easier. So the other thing that's worth knowing is, even if we're in a position where day one is seemingly like, I just don't know how to go about doing that, it doesn't mean that you can't start looking in that direction and doing some really great things to, yeah. And the biggest thing for me, it seems like pouring loads of love and compassion on yourself, getting out of any judgment. If you're beating yourself up, self-recrimination, all that kind of stuff, that is, well, you're not going to understand what's going on for you internally if you're doing that to yourself, because you're going to feel like you're split in two. You're going to feel like you're at war with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that induces more pressure and conflict and resistance, and it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And when you're wrapped up in all of that, you can't learn stuff. And the thing that's going to change everything for you is, as Sam said, insight and new thinking, deconstructing your beliefs, but you have to recognize what those beliefs are in the first place. So there is some, this is why, like the day one thing, with building momentum, yes, like I'll talk about that all day long, but it's like there's this, you know, before you start revering day ones and building successes upon success, recognize what's happening beforehand, because as you say, there's so much going on there, or there's so much potentially going on there. This is one of the reasons why, you know, what we refer to as data points are so bloody important, because you learn so much. That's the stuff that ultimately sets you free. So earlier on, when I was saying about it wasn't the full story, what I was referring to is, like, it's one thing to learn something. It's one thing to understand something cognitively. So I've understood something about the way that alcohol works with the brain and body that I didn't realize before. Wow, powerful. However, until I've experienced that in my own body, it's just a theory. And nice theory that it is, and factual and scientific, you know, that's the thing that had pulled me in. But the infamous story of Lapland, UK, was when I got to road test it. And that was when the first thing that I said to myself was, you can't waste it. This is when I was offered this drink. The second thing, the question that I asked myself was like, you know, fucking hell, my brain was very smart that day. It said, surely it can't be that bad, question mark. And what it was referring to was what it feels like when blood alcohol content's falling. Oh, it can't be that bad. Mm. Well, let me tell you, it's fucking awful. And this is the whole experiment of just having one drink in the middle of the day and experiencing what it feels like. And the thing that was particularly useful for me at that point in time was I'd had a week or two alcohol free. Very, you know, surprising to me, because prior to reading this PDF, I didn't want to have it, that I was trying to only drink on weekends, but, you know, we all know it doesn't work out. And so if I wasn't drinking, I felt deprived. And there I was, I had a couple of weeks of not drinking and feeling really good about it. And so at that point where I chose to drink, it was just so powerful for me, because I realized there was no upside to alcohol at all. So that initial buzz, the tipsy feeling, the euphoria, so-called euphoria, I didn't feel any of that because I was in a really good place. Like I had nowhere else to go. So notably, no upside. Right. Okay. And then the 4 to 5 hours of dysphoria, well, that was absolutely bloody awful. Mm. And so that was my own experience in my own body. Like, I was never going to forget that. So that, for me, was utterly transformative versus imagine that I was just trying to, like, if I'd have just gritted my teeth and pulled myself through a day alcohol-free, like, you know, how transformative would that have been versus this experimental attitude, this, like, well, let's see.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's, you know, and I often say to people in coaching groups when they're, often people kind of say things like, oh, we're this far through the group and there's loads of people who've got alcohol-free time together and there's this happening and there's that happening and I feel like I'm behind and I feel I'm comparing myself to all these other people who can do this and perhaps I'm the one that's, you know, broken and I won't figure this out or whatever. And I get it. You know, I've thought a lot of that kind of stuff myself. But what I always say to people is, yeah, but we never really know, do we? You know, you're comparing your insides to somebody else's outsides. You're saying that's how they are. Like, mm-hmm. And there's a sea of stuff going on inside of you that you can't see inside of them. There'll be a whole bunch of people out there that are kind of technically alcohol-free in the sense that they're not drinking, but they don't feel free. There'll be a whole bunch of people who are still drinking, but they're just about to have that insight like you did that changes everything, and they have no idea it's coming. They can't predict it, but they've just been showing up to coaching calls and reading the books and trusting that they're going to see what they need to see. And there'll be people all around that spectrum. And so, it, you know, very often, I mean, like, it seems really weird to say, doesn't it? But one of the things that I'm most grateful for is that after nearly 2 years being alcohol free, for whatever reason, I, you know, drank again. That was such a huge gift because it gave me a whole bunch of information that I would, you know, I don't know, maybe in an alternate universe, I could have just kept my world small and not walked into the stuff that was bothering me and scaring me. But that's not what I wanted at the end of the day. I didn't want that. And so it turns out in hindsight, it was a wonderful gift. It didn't feel like it at the time. And I get it. Like when we're struggling, as we put it, if we're struggling to get day ones, right, then what we're looking at, like we're putting, we're kind of like putting the importance on the behavior of a day alcohol free. We're making that the goal, if you like. Well, that's not the goal. The goal is something entirely different. There's something else that you want underneath it, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're fixated on just getting a day one together on the idea that, oh, well, that and that would solve everything, right? You know, it's likely not going to be like that. There's something bigger for us to see. There's definitely something to trusting that over the course of a period of time, be it a week, 30 days, 90 days or whatever, that certain things that are seemingly insurmountable just kind of sort themselves out and vanish. Mm. You know, things that we're like, we're experiencing on day three where we're like, oh God, I don't know if I could experience this all the time. Perhaps it's a craving or something. A lot of that stuff just shakes out as alcohol leaves our system. And it might be, the thing I often say to people is, would you be willing to trade me 2 weeks of discomfort for what you most want? Mm. And very often what people are like, hell yeah. I'm like, would you be willing to trade me a day of discomfort to learn something important for your journey? People are like, yes, I would. The thing that's often getting in the way is, you know, just panicking, freaking ourselves out about a craving or a feeling or something like that. It's like a very common pattern for people. It's pretty universal, actually. Mm. For people that are kind of struggling with that.
Mm. I think what you were pointing at is, it like fundamentally it changes everything. I'm doing this, I'm focusing on a behavioral based goal and focusing on achieving a behavioral end versus what my intention really is.
Yeah.
Because I know for sure that had I not had that PDF not come into my hands, I'd have done Dry January. And I'd have wished my life away. I'd have probably been miserable throughout most of it. It would have given me some sense.
I don't know if do you know that for sure?
What, that I'd have been miserable throughout it?
Yeah. How do you know that you wouldn't have had that insight coming from somewhere else at some point?
Well, I can't say for sure, but what I can, like what I know about how I felt beforehand, you know, I didn't want to stop drinking. I didn't.
I get it, yeah.
But what was just extraordinary for me was this shift from it's not about whether I drink or not. What it's about is I want to feel peace in my life. I was utterly stressed out, utterly overwhelmed, all the time, highly anxious. And the prize of feeling some semblance of peace, even a small amount, was like that was highly motivating. Mm,
yeah.
And then it just so happened that the byproduct was not drinking. And so I remember you and I recording a podcast about kind of the myths of the early days of being alcohol free and, oh, day three is the worst and all of this. And the fascinating thing for me was, because I didn't have a plan to stop drinking necessarily, I wasn't focused on that. Mm. That I had, and I hadn't been wrapped up in any of the community aspect where you're talking with other people that have kind of been through this before. When I went into the alcohol experiment, it was all like completely fresh, new. And so and I was kind of ahead of the game as well. I'd stopped in December as opposed to the 1st of January. So by the time people started talking about, oh, well, day five's the worst, I'm like, oh, well, I'm already on day eight. I don't remember day five being particularly bad, you know. And it was because I hadn't gone in with all these, you know, the heaviness of my old belief systems and the preconceived ideas of what it was going to be like. I was just there for it. And all fueled by this emotion-based goal, this feeling of, well, I want to find peace. And bit by bit, that's exactly what's happening.
That's a very interesting thing to reflect on for any kind of journey. Because if you think about it, I think what happens to a lot of people, if someone's trying to get a day together and they're focusing on the day, but actually they're like, you know, and then I'm going to, you know, and then I'll get day two and day three and go for forever, even if this is unconscious that they're going for forever. If something happens on day one, they feel a bit of discomfort or a craving or something, they're like, what happens is a whole sea of stuff happens in their system, which is, oh my God, if this is day one, imagine what day two, imagine, oh God, imagine if I have to do this for a week, oh fuck, I can't do this. And it seems like we're experiencing day one, but actually we're experiencing the story that we've got about how hard it's going to be and how long it's going to go on and all that stuff. When actually, if you go into something with an experimental mindset and you have some knowledge around what you're really up to, what do you want to learn? What do you want to discover about yourself? All that kind of stuff. You know, why are you really going on this journey? And actually just committing to that one day or one week or whatever, then you don't get caught up in all that bullshit story and everything. And you actually, and what often happens to a lot of people is they go, oh, that was really different. Like I did a day one before and it was a nightmare. And I did it with that approach or that way of looking at it. And actually it wasn't a nightmare. Actually, it was way easier than I thought, kind of thing. Because the only thing we're ever experiencing is thought. You know, we're not experiencing anything other than that. So yeah, I think that's a very powerful reflection, because it looks like knowing why we're doing it, knowing our intention, getting clarity around why we're on the journey much deeper than just the behavioral based stuff, isn't just kind of like helpful in an intellectual sense. It actually shifts our state. It shifts our experience, because we're looking in a different direction and we're kind of approaching it with a whole new set of eyes, if you like.
And then it seems, certainly from my own experience, it's then easier to stack up these days. And of course, when you are removing a toxic substance like alcohol from your life, every day counts massively, because you're healing. And those first few weeks are particularly important, because when we cycle, if you have a few days off and then you drink again, it's never fully out of your system. So kind of that 2 week mark is a wonderful time period, because out the other side of that, it's out of your system. And for somebody like me, other than pregnancy, it's like, wow, like this is the first time I've been here. Like I remember getting to the end of like the first week of the alcohol experiment, like, fucking hell, I've done a week. Yeah. Done a week and it's easy. And then, wow, shit, I've done 10 days. Like I'm in double digits now. And so whilst I was saying earlier that, you know, the time frame stuff only means what you make it mean, but it is. When I was orienting from a place of like, God, like for years I've felt like I don't even like myself, never mind love myself. Now I love myself enough to be doing this for myself. And you just start uncovering this innate love that we have, that we are, and you're taking care of yourself in a different way. And it's really compelling. And then you want to do more of it. And so this is why these wins, this stacking these days up, it does amount to something quite big. And then, of course, again, talking about booze, you get to 30 days-ish. And then the brain chemistry is recalibrating. So, you know, you're operating in a very different way than you might have been, certainly in my case, for years.
Yeah, I love that. Well, that seems like a nice place to round it off. I mean, I think the like key things that I'd pull out of it were, are you focusing on day one as an isolated kind of experiment just to see what you see, with a bigger picture in mind of, you know, what do you want to learn about your experience or that kind of stuff? Or are you kind of is it actually just like something that you're focusing on and stressing yourself on because it looks like, oh, if I just got this together, then I'd be able to stop forever or whatever. Like what would happen if you came out of the pressure cooker? You know, why are you on the journey? Have you actually asked yourself that question and reconnected with it recently? Perhaps it's something you asked yourself a year or two ago, but have you asked yourself again recently? And, you know, can you just watch that part of yourself that's been judging and pouring all that self-recrimination on, and just kind of, you don't have to fight it or go to war with it, but just look in a different direction and give yourself some love and some compassion for, you know, doing the best you can, you know? Oh, and also last one, you know, you're doing a lot of amazing stuff, even if you haven't stopped drinking yet. Can you honor that? Can you see the truth of that? They seem like the summarizing points of that chat. I thought it was quite clever. That was amazing that I did that with my brain.
I know. Funnily enough, I was just sitting here thinking, God, quite impressed Mr. Sam's managed to do like a little summary at the end. Maybe this is your new thing. You do a little summary at the end.
All right. We'll do that for a while. That makes sense.
One thing that you've sort of may slightly have missed, or we haven't talked about massively, but we were kind of alluding to, is that if booze isn't your thing at the minute, but something else is, and you're trying to get your day one of, as Sam said earlier, being sugar-free, or I was about to say gym-free then. That's easy, isn't it, being gym-free? if you're procrastinating about something, then all of what we talked about applies in terms of like the intention stuff is the most important bit. But we, when we get into momentum with something that you're wanting to make a habit of, I mean, that is massively important. Mm-hmm. There's some, I can't remember the exact, is it something like 66 days is kind of the amount of time.
Most of that stuff's been debunked to fuck.
Oh, has it?
I just think it's all, I think a lot of that stuff's like, if you go looking for those patterns, you'll find them. But I think some people say 30, some people say 60, some people say 90. I think basically if you build things up in small steps, like at some point it's going to click, right?
Oh, sure. I saw something come out recently because
I may be wrong.
I saw something come out recently and I remember thinking, shit, that's right then, because ages ago I remember the 66 stuck in my head, and then they said whatever this thing was recently, I'll have to go looking for it. Yeah, said 66, I was like, okay. But you know, what's effectively 2 months, if you think about, I don't know, I mean, one of the things that I did at the same time as booze, I cut the news out. And anything like, something else. So on a morning that I have like this, or have had this tendency to go straight to my phone, particularly because of like what goes on during the night, meaning business in other countries. So Australia and China being ahead. So one of the first things I always used to do is look at my phone, read the emails from what's come in overnight, and then depending on what's come through, and what I've got to do that day would kind of set my mood for the day. And I wanted to be much more intentional about how I was starting my days. And so trying to stop doing that and replace it with something else, like for me, notably, like it took some time because you've got those neural pathways there. Like it's so easy to roll over in bed absentmindedly, phone's there, straight away. So there is absolutely something, regardless of what the thing is, about that repeated behavior, even in, you know, really small amounts, but the consistency of it is really important.
Sure. Well, it all starts with that, you know, that first thing of like, oh, what's the point in going to the gym for one day, or what's the point in running for 10 minutes? It's like, oh, I want to run for an hour. I used to run marathons. Why would I run for 10 minutes? It's like, well, because do that a few times and then you'll be running for 20 minutes, right? So, yeah. It's all applicable, 100%. Awesome, mate. Yeah, right. I think we did record a few podcasts a while back about habit building as well. So if anyone's looking for a little bit more on that, go dive into that. I think there's two podcasts about a year ago, maybe more now. Golly, 145 episodes we've done.
No, we've
like
got
that.
Quite a back catalogue now, haven't we?
I know, eh? Right, team. Huge love to all of you. Anything else to add, Ellie?
Well, just make sure that you are make sure you're in the Facebook group, because there's a bunch of stuff going on in there, and the membership.
Yeah.
Because there's even more stuff going on in there, and you don't want to miss
it. Cool events. Yeah. Wicked monthly event to come and join us for. Definitely do that. Right. Hugely, huge love, team. See you soon.
Bye. See you next Tuesday.